The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
In Philadelphia, how are you, Pierre Maguire?
Pretty good, Mitch. How are you?
I'm good. I just want to read, as I did earlier in the show, this was a pleasant surprise, very pleasant surprise. Lanny McDonald, chairman of the Board of Hockey Hall of Fame. I am very pleased to welcome Pierre to the selection committee as he brings a wealth of knowledge that will complement the committee's deliberation in recognition of excellence in the game of hockey. I also extend our utmost appreciation and gratitude to Scotty Bowman for his distinguished service and outstanding contributions to the selection committee. Scotty's incredible understanding and perspective of the game has been a tremendous resource throughout his tenure. Scotty's 15-year limit concluded on New Year's Eve after serving on the committee since 2003. There is some perfect symmetry up here going from Scotty Bowman to you. Congratulations.
I am so touched and grateful. I will never forget Lanny McDonald's call. I was sitting at home about to go on the road. It was early in the season, and he couldn't have been more gracious, and I couldn't have been more humble and just blown away, to be perfectly frank, Mitch. And then you're sworn to secrecy, so you can't say anything to anybody, including, you know, the man potentially that you're replacing, and he's been like, you know, your best friend in hockey and a mentor, and Scotty Bowman. I had no idea that his limit had been up or his term had been up. But, you know, I kind of knew it was getting serious, and I'm being totally frank here, when I was in Russia and Igor Larionov and I were talking, and Igor said, I look forward to sitting next to you on the committee. And I'm like, am I allowed to talk to him or not? So I said, Igor, Mayan, I'm just blown away. And he said, I'm really, really happy for you to be on this committee. So it was really, I was extremely emotional and touched.
So you're sworn to secrecy, except between 5 and 5:30 on TSN
right,
690,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, on your show. Exactly.
That's what Rod said. Rod said, now we can finally usher in a new era of openness and transparency in the Hall of Fame proceedings. And I went,
right.
Yeah, and they'll throw him out just as quickly as they allowed him in.
Right, and you know, one of the best mentors I could have on this whole thing is Michael Farber. And I'm really grateful that I'll still have a chance with Michael and Bob McKenzie in particular, men that I've known for a very long time. And with Igor and you know, Brian Burke, you know, who I worked for and who hired me away from Pittsburgh. So, it's pretty neat. You know, you think about your whole life. And there's two things I'm really happy about. My mom's still here to understand and see it and hear it. And that my children will have an appreciation for it. And that I have a chance to be part of a group that's pretty amazing. It really is when you think about what they do for the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Now, again, and I'm not going to change my opinion on this because you're now part of it. I believe it should be open. I believe that people who vote and why they vote, that you don't have to necessarily explain your vote or anything, but right. it would be cool to see who voted for who and why or why not, much like they do in baseball. Baseball writers have been doing that, most of them, for quite a number of years. There is the word secrecy. I don't like it.
I'm looking forward to getting inside the room and to hear how everything plays out. That's the number one thing I think you have to do when you're appointed to something like this, is not to think that you know it all and to sit back and just evaluate and see the process. And if you think you can help change the process, then help change it. If you think the process is great, then stay with the process. But I'm looking forward to obviously being in the room and to see how it all plays out. And I think, you know, if I think I can help change it, then I will. If I think it's great, then I'm just going to play along. But I know one thing. As a rookie, you're there to evaluate and to be seen and not heard early on. I think that's really important.
So, again, congratulations, Pierre Maguire. This is the newest member of the selection committee of the Hockey Hall of Fame. It's a big deal. Let's go to the game tonight, Habs and Devils. This guy here, the coach of the Devils on game day, was visiting with Knuckles Nylund and Sean Campbell on Off the Cuff.
You know, I think he trusts Ray, he trusts myself. I think he trusts the ownership and the direction we're going. And now you're getting, a young guy that's matured. He loves the game. He's got a huge passion. He's got great talent. And his work ethic and his commitment level and buy-in this year have been absolutely fantastic. And I think you're seeing a guy that –
Just trying to play well, just trying to create offense, trying to get in sync with my line mates and have fun out there. It's you know, it's been a challenge, but at the same time, you know, coming into every game, I'm expecting to create offense for myself, you know, to try and get a point or a goal or whatever, and just try and help our team win, and that's the ultimate cause.
Tonight, as a group, I think we have to really know where he is on the ice at all times, and as I mentioned there at one point, it's you always want to take space and time away from players like that, because when you do give them those situations, they make the most of it, so we're going to keep an eye on him tonight.
Claude Julien, Taylor Hall, and John Hines, the coach of the Devils, on Off the Cuff earlier today. Pierre, let's go back to June 29th, 2016. Stamkos signed, Subban traded for Weber, Hall dealt for Larson.
All big moves, or huge moves.
Within, like, what, 10 minutes of each other, Gallo? Or is it 20 minutes, or less than half an hour, right?
Oh, yeah, it was really quick.
It was rat-a-tat-tat.
Yeah.
And, you know, my initial instinct for all three moves were, I'm glad Stamkos, if he can't come to Montreal, he's going back to Tampa, not going to Toronto. And Weber for Subban, most of you heard my reaction to it. Nothing against Shea Weber. And the initial reaction to the trade is, with New Jersey and Edmonton, is that it? There's got to be more to this, right? And now here we are, Taylor Hall is a superstar.
It was a trade that was made for organizational need. I can tell you that right now. Rashier was not in a rush to trade Adam Larson. I think you know my relationship with him. And he also knew that if he was going to change the organizational identity of the New Jersey Devils, he had to do something bold. And one of the bold things he had to do is trade away a very competent defenseman, and Adam Larson is, for a high-profile scoring winger or center iceman who could manufacture tons of offense. And they were trying to change. You know, I told you that from the day that Ray got hired. They're going to try to change this thing. And eventually, they've done it. It didn't happen overnight. Getting Nico Hischier helped. Obviously, getting Taylor Hall helped. Getting Jesper Bratt drafted and put into their lineup helped a ton. Blake Coleman with speed. You know, you look in the back end with Will Butcher and Ben Lovejoy. That's helped a lot. Acquiring Sammy Vatanen has helped a lot. So Ray really had a vision for this, but the number one part of his vision was getting Taylor Hall. I mean, that was a humongous part of what he was trying to do, and it's worked out fantastically well. And I know Taylor, when I talked to him this summer in particular, was just so excited about what the future bore for the New Jersey Devils and for himself in particular there.
I know that Adam Larson is a defenseman that a lot of people in hockey value more than I'd say the average fan does. And
correct,
it's as lopsided as it looks right now, he is a player who has value. But the Oilers bottoming out as they have this year, it just shines a bigger spotlight. If you're going to trade that kind of talent, you have to get more. I don't care what the salary cap ramifications are. This is a how to not to build a team. It's a handbook. In both directions, for Ray Shero, how to build a team, and in Edmonton, how not to build a team.
But part of the issue in Edmonton was I don't think you can correctly or indirectly blame it on Peter Chiarelli. And the reason why I say that is the team was built before he got there, and then he had to adapt to what he had been presented.
He overpaid, so, Pierre. Come on. It was a bad overpayment.
He did, but again, think about what they did over time. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just telling you to think about what they've done over time there. And part of what he was looking at, especially with Draisaitl and McDavid, well, McDavid in particular, but is salary cap implication with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, with Jordan Eberle. They were there at the time. So it's great, and I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but the salary cap mattered in a lot of this stuff. It really did. And he inherited some of that. He inherited most of it, actually.
With Pierre Maguire on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. Once again, John Hines from earlier today on Off the Cuff with Knuckles and Sean Campbell.
I think the trust between the general manager and coach is important in this type of situation, because you know you're going to go through some adversity. And also, I think our vision of how we want to play, how we want the team to be run on and off the ice, how we want to treat players, I think we're in sync with those things. So it's been he's been a very good mentor to me. in certain areas, but I think the way that we view how an organization should be run, how you want to play, the types of players we want, we're in sync with that, and that I think has made it a very good relationship.
Pretty much a postscript to what Pierre was outlining, what Ray Shiro's vision was when he took over. So, Pierre, if you're the Montreal Canadiens and their management group, how much worse could you do than look at the Devils and say, maybe we ought to take a page out of that book?
I'm not in a position to say that. You know, I made my feelings felt when I met with their ownership group about what I think they needed to do and where they needed to go, and they made decisions on their own, so I'm not really in a position to speak about that. What I would say is that New Jersey clearly had an identity and a plan they wanted to put forth, and they've done that. They've clearly done that, and they will continue to get better. They had 7 players playing in the World Junior this year that are considered, I would say, in my opinion anyways, B-plus or better prospects and probably closer to A-level prospects. So their future is going to be extremely bright. In terms of what Montreal would like to do with their management team, I couldn't begin to address that. That's up to them.
I mean, in terms of moving forward and shifting the emphasis on how they want their team to play.
Well, that comes down to the trust, and I've told you this a million times over, the trust between the manager and the coach has got to be huge, and it comes down to the coaching message that's being relayed to the players and the manager's message to the coach in terms of the type of players they're going to get the coach. So there's got to be a trust there, and again, I don't know what's going on pro or con with Montreal. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't begin to tell you. But I know what's going on in New Jersey, and I've known it since they were both hired. So, I mean, that's where they are as a group, and they're going in a very good direction. We'll see how Montreal goes going forward.
What I see in practice is good skill level, good skater. You know, he's got a lot of upside to him. So now it's a matter of giving him a chance to show that in a game situation. And that's what, you know, a lot of our young players right now are having is that opportunity. And he's one of the newest ones to get that same opportunity. So we look forward to seeing him tonight and being able to evaluate him a little bit better.
All right, that is Claude Julien on Renat Valiev, the young Russian defenseman who will make his Habs debut. What would you expect to see from him tonight playing?
It's fair. I think he's more of a 3-4-5-6 type of defenseman. I don't think he's an instant impact player. I would say one of the reasons why he became disposable or expendable in Toronto is because he'd been beaten out by certain guys internally. It reminds me a little bit about Jonathan Drouin. Got beat out, you know, by Braden Point, and I told you that a million times when that deal went down. And this is a player that, you know, I think got beat out by other players, and that's why he became expendable in Toronto.
Pierre, you know, so you look at the Canadiens' defense, and you mentioned Valiev potentially a 5-6 or 7 defenseman. Canadiens have Jordy Benn, a 5-6 or 7 defenseman. They have Mike Riley, a 5-6, 7 defenseman. They have Noah Juulsen, a 5-6, 7.
He's going to be better than a 5-6.
Juulsen's better than that. Mitch Gallo, he's better than that. I agree with Mitch. I didn't want to interrupt you. He's better than that.
Yeah, that's fair. But right now, you know, if you look at the depth chart, that's about where he is. And sure, maybe the upside's a little bit more. But the point being, even if you take Juulsen out of the equation and factor him a little bit higher, I'm just wondering, all these 5-6-7s, how do you choose between them when they're kind of interchangeable?
You can't. That's why you go with the hot hand, and that's why you have to upgrade, and that's why drafting and pro scouting matters a ton, and how you choose to build your team. They chose to go one direction, and their direction didn't work out the way they planned on it going. I mean, they really did. I think, obviously, not having Alexei Emelin, not having Andrei Markov there, they chose to trade Nathan Beaulieu, they chose to trade PK Subban. Those are their decisions. So now they have to decide how they want to fix it going forward.
So whether this applies to Valiev or any other young player who hasn't spent much time with the team, where do you stand when it comes to making sure the young player is comfortable and not overwhelmed versus giving him a lot of ice time, considering they're not making the playoffs and seeing what they're capable of?
Well, I think you got to turn them loose now. There's nothing really that you're playing for except to see what your team's going to look like in a year from now, or even less than a year from now when training camp starts next year. So I would turn them loose. I went through this. You know, I went through this in Hartford, and I even went through a little bit of it in Ottawa. even though we brought in more mature players, so we didn't have to really rely on younger ones when I was in Ottawa. But that's what you need to do, is you need to give them an opportunity to play, and then you can evaluate them as they start to play and start to feel whether they're NHL players or not. And then you can decide, are they a 3 or are they a 5? Are they a 6? Are they a depth player on defense? And then you can say, yeah, third-line player, first-line player, not a player. You know, you can decide all those things, but this is when you kind of give them live fire exercise to determine whether they can play or not.
Well, what I don't like is what the report that came out from the league is different than what they told me. They told me he was interfered with outside the paint, which is not true. And so that tonight is goalie interference any way you look at it. That tonight, the goal's off. The coaches in the league, like, no one knows what's going on. So we better get it solved. Just saying, okay, just the statement, then saying, okay, we're going to leave it the way it is. No chance. Let's get it fixed. Let's get it fixed before the playoffs so we all know the rules. Anything else?
Mike Babcock, after the loss to the Sabres, their fourth straight loss. Pierre, I don't think 2 weeks go by without a coach saying what we just heard Babcock say. And we're running out of, as Ted Teeven used to say, racetrack here. We are going to get into the playoffs, and nothing's going to change, and something dramatic is going to go down.
Rod, go pull a tape of when we started talking about this. I totally agree. I mean, this is not something that just started. I totally agree with you and agree with Mike. And, you know, obviously when Johan Larson went by the goalie, Freddie Anderson, that was a tough situation. There's no question. That was a tough situation. Did Jake Gardner push him in or not? It was really close. It was really, really close on that play. But clearly the left leg of Freddie Anderson was hit. There's no question it got hit by Johan Larson. There's no question. So I've done a lot of radio about this today, and a lot of different, you know, people that I've talked with in the league, they agree with Mike Babcock. But again, it goes back to what is it going to be? And I'm not sure we're going to have a clear-cut definition for goalie interference until after the season. I really don't believe we will. I think they're going to have to put together a blue ribbon panel and decide emphatically what are the criteria for goalie interference. They're going to have to decide. They really haven't formulated it yet, to my knowledge anyways.
What did you think of what you saw at ice level from Thomas Plekanec, and should the Leafs be concerned at all that they're 0-4 with him in the lineup?
I would be very concerned, but I was not bullish on the move. I've told you this ad infinitum. Thomas's better days are far past him. That's not to say that Thomas was not a good player and still can't help a team. But Thomas can't take the place of Austin Matthews. And they tried to do that the other night in Washington, and it didn't work out. And he took a huge hit from Tom Wilson early in the game. And you know what? I think a younger Thomas Plekanec wouldn't have taken that hit. And that's something that when I'm scouting, I'm looking for with older players. Do they have the awareness to avoid those kinds of situations? You know, do they have the peripheral vision? Do they have the quickness? Do they have the on-ice awareness of where they are? There's a lot of things when you're evaluating players like that.
Yeah, that's a great one to highlight. I remember Kovalev, well into his 30s, he remained so elusive, and at the end you kept seeing him on the ice.
One of the things when I knew Nick Lidstrom was near the end, he got wiped out by Ian LaPerriere in Colorado. I mean, he didn't get hit. He got wiped out. It's one of the few times I've seen him really get hit over the course of his career. And I was like, you know what? He's starting to slow down. All this ice time is starting to wear on him. And that's when you start to see it. But I think that's part of it when you're evaluating players. So that's when I saw that the other night. I was like, you know what? Maybe we're those of us that are questioning him, maybe that's part of the problem.
Among the games tonight, we'll finish up with the Habs and Devils in just a moment with Pierre McGuire. Detroit at Boston, and the Bruins got news that Charlie McAvoy, who was injured against the Canadiens, is out 4 weeks. If all goes well, Pierre, and they get him back for the final game or two of the regular season before the playoffs, and he's fine health-wise after the 4 weeks, isn't it a blessing in disguise to have
it
these?
Go ahead, finish up.
No, I just think that there's so much hockey to be played for a team like Boston that could conceivably go deep into the playoffs that, to me, it amounts to a rest, a much-needed rest this deep into the season.
Well, especially for a kid. Most kids start to plateau right around Christmas time when they're first in the league, and then they hit the wall starting probably around, you know, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th of January, and then they have a tough time for about a month. And for a player like Charlie, who's played a ton and been robust and obviously plays with Zdeno Chara when he's healthy, it's they're in major matchup situations. So maybe it can benefit him. The only thing I'd be concerned about is the tempo, because last year when he came in, he was coming out of a college season where he was really good. He was coming out of a World Junior where he was really good. He was exposed to a lot of tempo. He's not over 4 weeks, and maybe even a little bit longer, he will not have been exposed to tempo. And as you know, the playoff tempo, Mitch, really, it becomes a whole other animal. So we'll see. But I do think one of the things I think Donnie Sweeney did that was really smart, getting Nick Holden out of New York. Nick Holden was very good insurance, and that's why you go out and get older players that can play in the league and insulate your defense. It was a pretty smart move, very smart move.
Habs and Devils in about 90 minutes with Dan Roberts and Sergio Momesso. Ray Ferraro will join us in just a few minutes. Ray was not available in his usual slot at 4:30, and then after 6, Pierre LeBrun. So everybody knows about Taylor Hall. Patrick Maroon has picked up a point in each of the games that he's played. Michael Grabner still hasn't scored since they acquired him. What specifically with that tight playoff race in the Eastern Conference, where in the neighborhood where the Devils are, what do you expect tonight from both teams?
Well, they're going to push. They played a tremendous game the other day against Las Vegas. Marc-Andre Fleury was a difference maker in that game on Sunday evening. Jesper Bratt didn't play for New Jersey. I don't know whether he's playing tonight or not, but I can tell you, Nico Hischier and Taylor Hall, you better have a plan to stop them. Their defense is active, especially Andy Green, Will Butcher, Sammy Vatanen, Ben Lovejoy. They'll jump in. They'll cause you some problems off the rush. Their up-tempo game is fantastic. They play a pure speed game. So if you're not ready for that, it's going to be a problem. Maroon and Zajac the other night, along with the rest of the team, I thought did some really good things. Like Grabner was on that line with Maroon and Zajac, and they did some tremendous, tremendous things. So I don't know whether they're going to keep them together or not tonight, but the Devils, they up-tempo you, Mitch. They really do. They up-tempo you huge.